Welcome to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga from Cleveland.com, and I'm joined, as always, by our Tribe beat writer, Paul Hoynes. Paul, good to hear from you again.
Hey, Joe. Good to see you.
Well, let's jump right into the big question, sort of the big news of the moment is what's going to happen on Friday or sometime this weekend when Brandon Guyer is ready to come off the DL. And eventually when Tyler Naquin's able to come off the DL, but, you know, first and foremost, there's a decision that's going to have to be made about either a veteran player or somebody like Greg Allen in the outfield.
Right. Yeah, definitely, Joe. I mean, it's going to be an interesting decision. You know, they've got Guyer coming back supposedly on Friday. You know, you've got Greg Allen with options who's played very well. And obviously, you know, kind of gained ground on Bradley Zimmer, who was sent down earlier in the week. And you've got a couple veterans sitting there, Melky Cabrera and Rajah Davis, and, you know, that are both on one-year kind of deals. So you wonder which way they're going to go. You know, I really think Rajah probably helped himself and showed what he has to offer in Wednesday's 3-1 win when he stole three bases, got a couple hits, scored a run. You know, I think Francona likes that element of speed, even though, you know, we haven't seen a lot of Rajah, you know, and he struggled at the plate. Cabrera gives him a switch hitter, you know, kind of a, you know, right now with Lonnie Chisenhall coming back earlier in the week, another outfielder. You know, I think he's lost some playing time in right field, but, you know, I think he's attractive as well because he's a switch hitter, and now he gives Francona a veteran pinch hitter. So it's going to be intriguing to see which way they go with this.
Well, and let's lay out the contract situation as well. Guyer is owed just a little less than $3 million this year, and I think he's under contract next year for $3 million as well.
I think he's got an option. It's an option.
It's a team option or a.
Yeah, club option.
Club option for three. So, you know, he's at least making close to $3 million this year. Davis is $1.75 million, and I think Cabrera is $1 million on their 1 year deals. And like you said, Greg Allen has options remaining. So how much would that factor in, just the you know, not being willing to eat you know, a lot of contract and money if you send Greg Allen down, you don't have to, you know, sort of eat that money between Allen or Cabrera and Davis.
Yeah, I think even for this front office, this ownership, I don't think, you know, what Davis and Cabrera are making is nothing. That's chump change in the big leagues. I don't think that would prevent them from making a decision from dropping one of those guys. You know, Guyer, you know, I think that would be a little more significant. I think, you know, and they signed him for a reason. They signed him to a multi-year deal for a reason. They haven't seen the best out of him for the last 2 years because of injuries. So I'm willing to bet they give him another chance, let him hit against some lefties. That's what he's good at. And, you know, they need a pure center fielder. And, you know, I don't think Rajah can play every day right now. You could stick him out there, but I don't think you're going to get the production that you get out of Allen defensively. So it's really going to be a tough call for these guys.
Were you surprised when they sent Bradley Zimmer back out when they activated Lonnie Chisenhall this week?
You know, I was a little bit, but you know, I think you pointed out to me that, you know, the guy had struck out over 40% of the time, you know, and even in this day and age when everybody strikes out, it seems 40% of the time, that's a lot, you know, and I think, you know, he kind of looked lost at the plate to me. The big thing with Zimmer is, you know, you get A-plus defense from him. You know, he's got great arm, great speed in the outfield. You know, he covers a lot of territory, and he's got great speed on the bases. But if he doesn't get on base, he's not helping you, you know, at that part of the game. So, you know, I think Allen came on and you know, just he didn't break down any doors, but I think he did show you know, the element of being a halfway decent, a productive offensive player, and he still gives you good defense. So I think that's and I think they mainly want to get Zimmer straightened out. You know, get him down there, start changing some, making some adjustments with the swing, so he can make more contact and come up, because he's got half the game now. He's just got to, you know, work on his offense, but defensively and base running, you know, he's a force.
Well, and we saw over the weekend, you know, he laid out, made a Superman catch in the outfield that saved a run in Minnesota. But then something that Terry Francona said really did sort of stick out. You know, if you're striking out as much as somebody like Zimmer is doing, then when you make contact, you better be doing some damage. And I guess that's another thing that Francona sort of pointed out was, 40% strikeout rate, but then when you do make contact, you're getting singles here and there instead of knocking the ball out of the park. He can live with Yonder Alonso and Edwin Encarnacion hitting the ball, you know, making a little less contact, because when they do hit the ball, they're driving it. So, you know, and just briefly want to touch on Edwin Encarnacion sort of heating up in this early part of June, late part of May. Player of the week last week, you know, really sort of driving the ball to right field. And when Edwin's going good, that's when you see that happening. Just your thoughts on Edwin and his hot streak lately.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, Francona kept saying, it's going to happen. And it's happening right in front of our eyes. I think when the weather got warm, I think Edwin warmed up. You wouldn't. It's still kind of cool here the last couple of days. It's felt like September, but you know, Encarnacion is doing what he did last year. He's following the same kind of path. I think he's more productive than he was at this point of last year. And I think going to Minnesota really got him going. He loves to hit there. You know, Mike Napoli was the same way. You know, big right-handed hitters, they love to hit at that park for some reason. I think they aim for the third deck in left field, and they've hit it a couple times. So whatever it is, you know, that target field, everyone used to complain when it first opened that you couldn't hit home runs there. But it certainly doesn't seem to bother Edwin. And Carlos Santana was the same way when he went up there. He loved that place.
Right. Edwin coming off an 11-game hitting streak, and he now owns the all-time record for visiting players at Target Field for home runs. I think he's got 15 or 16, something like that. But all right, moving on. Paul, you had a piece just looking at the bullpen, the embattled bullpen, as we'll always refer to it now. And the job that Neil Ramirez has been able to come in and do the last couple of games, still waiting on Andrew Miller to recover and come off the DL. But for as bad as May was, you've maybe sort of starting to see a couple of threads, a couple of silver linings here with the performance so far in June.
Yeah, I'd say it's threads. I wouldn't say a silver lining yet, Joe. Just very, very thin threads. It kind of points out just the sheer scramble that these guys are in. The scramble mode they've operated in. You know, Otero and McAllister, you know, have kind of been, you know, pushed to the back end of the bullpen. You know, now we're seeing a whole different set of setup guys, Ramirez and Oliver Perez. Olsen has struggled. What have they had? 15 different relievers so far this year.
And they had 12 all of last year.
Yeah, and it's just crazy. It's, you know, and I just think it shows you the extent, or maybe the desperation, that Francona, what he feels, that he's willing to give anybody who gets one out in the seventh inning, he's willing to run him back out there just to because no one else has given him a consistent performance. And even Cody Allen is, you know, I think, you know, having to, you know, coming to the ballpark each day knowing you might have to, you know, get four or five outs for a save, you know, that can't be settling for a closer in this day and age. It's not like, you know, he's Doug Jones, who used to do that with regularity, you know, 10, 20, 25 years ago. I mean, you know, closers are supposed to pitch in the first at one inning, get a or one inning or less, and get a save. And right now he's being asked to do a lot. And I think that, you know, I wonder if that's going to catch up to him in the second half.
And we talk about Francona's use of the starting rotation as well. They're averaging about 6 to 8 more pitches per, and it might not sound like a lot, but he's leaving them in. We saw evidence of that in Clevinger's last start over the weekend, where they left him in to get one batter, and that one batter, you know, tied the game on him. It ends up taxing not just the back end of your bullpen and those guys, but also your starters as well. You know, is there any fear that these starters might burn out by the end of the year just by extending them even this little bit now?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is, Joe. And I would not be surprised if we see, you know, Adam Plutko and – well, they've got to add a fifth starter, right?
Right.
Plutko or who's the other kid? Shane
Bieber.
Yeah. So they could – you know, they have to add a fifth starter pretty soon here. But, you know, I would think if they keep, you know, putting the stress on if starters keep throwing, you know, 100 to 110, 112 pitches a game like they have been, you know, I would think they try to intersperse some guys with spot starts, you know, try to give them as many extra days rest as they can, because they know what could happen. You know, Kyle Willis and Francona have been around. I mean, the front office is experienced. They know, you know, what they're doing right now. They're kind of playing with dynamite right now. And they know whatever they get at the front end of the season can come back and kick them in the rear end and in the back end. So, you know, they've got to be careful. And I think they're trying to they're playing a danger. You know, they're playing a delicate game, a balancing game, trying to win as many games as they can without taxing the rotation, and trying desperately to find somebody in the bullpen that can pitch in the seventh and eighth inning.
Well, and you look at the rotation, the starting rotation has done the job there. The number of quality starts, I think consecutive quality starts is, you know, super high. It's like in the Kluber has had a quality start in every outing this year.
Yeah, 13 straight quality starts.
And the offense is doing what it needs to do. The top, you know, four or five guys in the order are elite right now in the league in terms of their production. You almost feel like a sense of like you're wasting some of this just by having one sort of leg of the three-legged stool, you know, shorter with this bullpen, you know, not coming through with these guys.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, you rarely get all three, offense, defense, pitching, starting pitching and bullpen and relief pitching all pulling in the same direction at the same time. When you do, you win 102 games like the Indians did last year. So, you know, I would think they're going to struggle to do that this year, and they knew that coming in. They knew this was not going to be a perfect club, far from perfect club. And, you know, as we've said so many times before, they're so fortunate to be playing in a division where, you know, no one else seems capable of making a big move to take to really challenge them. You know, we saw the Twins take 3 out of 4 from them over last weekend. You did a good job, a great job covering that series. But it's still, you know, the Indians are still, what, 2, 2.5 up, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's I think, you know, they kind of hedged their bet this year. They knew something coming in that the division was rebuilding, and they could try to make this up on the fly. And, you know, I hope they do it, because, like you said, you've got to, you know, you can't if you're going to be successful. I mean, maybe you can win the division like this with mm-hmm. three parts pulling against one part, you know. But when you get to the postseason, you can't have a flaw. If you have a flaw in the postseason, it's going to get exposed, and you're going to go home before you're supposed to.
Really quickly, you touched on the fifth starter situation, and boy, how nice was it for Terry Francona on Saturday night when you know, the Indians went back to their hotel room after losing to Minnesota, to get the text to find out that Adam Plutko had tossed a no-hitter in Syracuse for Columbus. Now Shane Bieber's got to go out and throw in a perfect game to yeah, one-up him to get
that's
that.
All they do. That's all those two guys do, right? No-hitters or perfect games, or they flirt with perfect games. Or like Plutko was, what, he had a perfect game going or a no-hitter, and they took him out because he'd reached a pitch count and he was coming up to Cleveland. So, you know, that's amazing. That's, you know, I can't read, you know, it's, you know, it's got to make the organization feel so good. And you got those, you know, quality arms like that in the pipeline. And so, you know, you kind of get to, you know, flip a coin or mix and match. You've got the best of both worlds. You got a great rotation in the big leagues. And you got two kind of starters that are you know, pitching great in Triple A.
Well, and that's one of the things that Terry mentioned after the game, or before the game on Sunday, after hearing about this Saturday night. He said, you know, there's a lot of guys in the player development side for the Indians who are walking around with their chest puffed out, you know, this weekend because they've seen it was very rapid succession there that Plutko sort of had this rise and that Bieber was able to come up. These guys have not only done it at the AAA level where they're dominating this year, but they've both had a taste in the major leagues and they've both been incredibly successful. You know, Bieber might not have won the game that he started on Thursday, but for four innings, he was dominant.
Yeah. And then, you know, so that's, and then, and Plutko was what, 3-0? I mean, he didn't pitch great against the White Sox, but you know, he did a five and fly and did enough to win. And, you know, that's all you're looking for from a fifth starter, which is probably his role right now. So, you know, it's got to be really a good feeling. And if they could just find somebody to plug the hole in the bullpen or one or two guys, I don't think one guy is going to do it, but they need some consistency out of their relievers. I thought it was interesting that when Francona was talking about after Wednesday's win, that he's not going to run away from Otero and McAllister. He's, and you know, the and Olson, he's going to keep pitching everybody down there.
The fans might want him to run away from those guys, but
the opportunity is going to be there. Those guys, if they're healthy, you know, they're going to get a chance, and you know, and maybe. You know, since they got out of May and that was such a dreadful month, maybe they could just take a deep breath and you know, all it takes probably is to get one or two guys out in a row and you get your confidence back. So hopefully that happens with Otero, McAllister, Olson. You know, they need them. They're not going to go very far without them.
Well, maybe six games against the White Sox and Tigers coming up. We'll get those guys back on track. A couple of good appearances out of the bullpen for those three that you mentioned. Let's take a couple of questions. We fielded from Twitter and from the folks out there. You got a list in front of you. Go ahead and jump in with a few of those.
Okay. This is from Dennis Quigley. Why are this, and referring to the draft, the draft that finished Wednesday. Why are the Indians picking so low? Second from the bottom. Just below the Dodgers in Houston. And well, Dennis, you know, the draft order is based on the standings from last year. And the Indians won 102 games last year. So they go in reverse order. That's why Detroit and San Francisco had the two worst records in baseball last year. They drafted 1-2. And the Indians were drafted near the bottom because they had one of the best records. And I mean, that's why. There's no conspiracy here against the Tribe.
Right, and they did have a couple of compensatory picks as well for, you know, losing Carlos Santana. They got a pick sort of sandwiched in between the first and second round there. They actually drafted four – they had four picks in the first 67. So the first night they made four picks, and you know, that's big for a guy like Scott Barnsby who's running his first draft. You know, it's not his first – certainly not his first rodeo, but the first time being in charge, and he's got four picks in the first 67. If you were the Browns, you could build a contender, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he was really excited about that. I think all the scouts were as well, especially after not having a number one pick last year. You know, they lost signing Edwin Encarnacion from Toronto in the previous December, the previous offseason. Right. So, you know, they did, you know, who knows what, you know, who knows how these guys will turn out that they took, but, you know, I know they thought they did okay. They were very positive about the four guys they took on the first night of the draft.
Go ahead.
Got another one here. This is from Jim Corrigan from Fairview Park, and he's being a little humorous here, and we've got to set the scene here. Well, let's just go here. He goes, "Hey, you guys, have you ever heard Tom Hamilton, the Indians, the voice of the Indians, mistakenly say, 'swinging a midge'?" And I think that was in reference to the game two nights ago where the midges returned to a Progressive Field. The bugs that you know, kind of annually swarm the players during games, players and fans. So I've never heard them say that. That's pretty good turn of a phrase, though, Jim.
Yeah, well, we hate them when they show up and they bother us, but when they show up and help us like Jabba Chamberlain back in 2007, you know, that's they're not entirely a bad thing. I think the funniest thing we heard about the midges was in the post game, where Terry Francona mentioned that they particularly are attracted to the I want to quote him exactly. He said, "quote the greasy skinned Italians such as himself in the dugout. The midges have an affinity for them." So yeah, they're back. They're all over the windows in the press box, and they're no fun.
Yeah, I remember that game with Jabba Chamberlain and the Yankees. I remember the whole Yankee infield came. You know, during a timeout, they came onto the mound and they're all exchanging bug spray. You know, spraying all, and it never worked. I mean, they were all the midges just swarmed them, and Fausto Carmona, AKA Roberto Hernandez, wasn't even bothered by him. He had them all dead midges all over his face, and he just kept pitching and kept getting the Yankees out. That was a game to remember.
Well, Tuesday was Lonnie Chisenhall's first game back with the team, and he said, "Yeah, now I don't have to eat the post game meal because he got a couple of mouthfuls of them as he was running out there to right field."
Okay, I've got a question here from let's see. Tom Rackhorst from Geneva. He referring to one of the games against the Brewers, I guess the Tuesday night game. He goes, "Lorenzo Cain is using a bat with a large chunk out of the end. Is that legal? He used the bat to single up the middle." Yeah, I mean, a cup bat is legal as long as it, you know, fits the standards and fits you know, the inspection of the bat. But a lot of guys use cup bats, that's what they're called, with, you know, kind of a chunk of wood scooped out of the top of the bat,
right? And that's basically for, it's that you have the same mass and the same size of the bat, you just reduce the weight by a little bit, and that sort of helps them. The other thing it does is if you hit a ball off the end of that, it can splinter the bat a little easier. So, you know, that's another thing that guys have to take into account.
Okay, and let's see. This is from Bob Ernest from Mansfield. He's referring to Jesus Aguilar returning to Cleveland for the first time with Milwaukee. And, you know, I talked to Jesus, and he was, you know, he kind of was – you know, he thanked the Indians for making him mentally tougher, you know, by really not giving him the opportunity he thought he deserved. But he, you know, he thought it really helped him, and it helped him make an impact with the Brewers the last 2 years. And but Bob Ernest said, you know, of the Indians, you know, letting Aguilar go or put him on waivers and then watching the Brewers claim him, he goes, "This is very typical of the Indians. They always go for the older player and hope to strike gold. The younger player gets very little time to prove himself." Yeah. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think Terry Francona freely admitted. He said I we never gave him a chance, and he said that's on me. That's it's sort of his mode of operation. But look, they signed Edwin Encarnacion. I mean,
yeah, and Napoli before
that, and you had Carlos Santana there at first base, and he wasn't going anywhere. So
right.
where are you going to put Jesus Aguilar in that situation? I get that, you know, he sort of felt like he didn't have a way to break through, but you know, when those guys, tell it to any shortstop in the Indians organization right now, it's the same song they're singing.
That's great. Yeah. And you know, Doc Edwards always had a, when he managed the Indians when I first started covering them, and when a situation went like this was brought up, you know, cause there's players blocked in every organization. And unfortunately, that's what happened to Jesus here. But, you know, give him credit. He went somewhere else and showed he could hit. You know, with the few at-bats he got here, we never saw if he could hit. He hit throughout the minors for the Tribe, but we never saw it translate into the big leagues. And, you know, Doc Edwards used to say when a situation like this would come up, he goes, just think for a minute. How many center fielders do you think Mickey Mantle sent home with the Yankees? And you know, if you get a great player in front of you, you're done. You either change positions or you ask for a trade, or you know, back then you had to just kind of suck it up because of what, there wasn't, you know, there was a reserve clause, and you belonged to the organization forever.
Oh, that's great. All right. Well, the great batch of questions there, and we'll always take submissions from the folks who listen along. Just really quickly, we touched on the draft briefly there, but I wanted to mention, you know, just to get your thoughts. They took in the first round the 29th player overall, Noah Naylor, a catcher from St. Joan of Arc High School, 6'1", 195, left-handed hitter. And I guess as far as hitting goes, he's probably one of the elite hitters in the first round in the draft class. That's what he projects at. You know, your thoughts on taking a catcher? Boy, this organization's got some pretty good catching talent at the upper levels of the minors and in on the major league staff. But you know, this guy's going to be starting out probably in extended spring or fall. You know, the Arizona Fall League, stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it was an interesting pick, you know, just because he's a catcher. You know, if you look back in the draft, you know, catchers going in the first round with the Indians, at least, you know, the last guy that made a big impact with the Indians was Ray Fossey. Wow. And he was the first guy drafted in the first – I mean, that was in 1965, the first year there was a draft. So, you know, that's how far back you got to go. So – and, you know, there was a couple other guys, Glass and Rick Cerrone. They were drafted in the 70s. But Cerrone, you know, had a great career, but he only played 14 games with the Indians, and Glass never got above AA. So, you know, this is an interesting pick. And, you know, he's got a brother that's, you know, a hot prospect with San Diego. And he comes from Canada, which makes it also an interesting pick. You know, you don't think about baseball players coming from Canada, but you know that's over the years that's changed. Obviously, you know, a lot of good players have come out of Canada, and so it's going to be interesting to see where this kid ends up. They think he could change positions, maybe you know for third base, or he's athletic enough to go to third or first, maybe the outfield. But right now they want to keep him at catcher. And you think about this, Joe. I mean, you know, it takes 4 to 5 years for a high school kid to usually develop, you know, and who knows what this team is going to look like then. You know, that's a lifetime in the big leagues. So,
right.
You know, so, I mean, you know, Gomes and Perez might be gone. Mejia might be playing in the outfield. Who knows? So, you know, you can't draft – when you go into the amateur draft, I mean, if you got an organizational weakness, fine, but you can't draft, go into the amateur draft with the big league club in mind because, you know, these, I mean, unless you draft all college kids and they're on the fast track and they're here in a year and a half or 2 years, you know, that doesn't make any difference. Your big league club could be totally different 4 to 5 years from now.
Right. They took 23 pitchers, 16 righties, 7 lefties. They took 15 position players, not including catchers. They took 4 catchers separate of that, but 15 position players, including 8 outfielders and 7 infielders. Really mixed and matched the whether they were college or high school, but for the most part, they took a lot of college pitchers, 12 right-handed college pitchers, 5 left-handed college pitchers, and then just varying ages and whatnot. The second pick they made was Ethan Hankins, who's 6'6" and 200 some pounds. Had a shoulder issue during the season and sort of fell off a little bit, but I guess they're banking on the physical tools still being there in terms of this big guy who throws hard and gets a lot of strikeouts with a plus fastball.
Yeah, they're really excited about this. It's kind of a reach, I think a lot of draft a lot of guys that do mock drafts had this guy before he got hurt. They talked about him being a really a high first round pick, maybe the number one pick in the draft.
Right.
And he, like you said, he hurt his shoulder this in February, missed 4 or 5 weeks, came back at the end of his high school season, still pitched well. The Indians had their doctors check him out. And they felt, secure about drafting him. And, if they sign him, it's going to probably – his slot value is over $2 million. So, it's going to cost them, a pretty penny to make this investment in him. But, before he got hurt, he had a great summer season. He pitched for Team USA against – won the World Cup last fall. So, he's an exciting guy. I'm anxious to see him, Joe. I think I hopefully he's healthy and he stays together, because they've got, Brady Aiken was their number one pick, 2015.
Mm-hmm.
He was coming off Tommy John surgery. We have not, he pitched at Lake County last year, mixed results, but he pitched the whole season, but his velocity's down, and he's still in extended spring right now,
right,
trying to rebuild his arm, kind of rebuild the strength and velocity. So, it's a gamble. It's a gamble when you take any of these guys, but especially if they're coming off an injury.
Right. Well, with Hankins, he was a verbal commit to Vanderbilt, and obviously the $2 million slot there might change his mind, but anytime we can do damage to our buddy Jensen Lewis over on Fox Sports, He said, you never know, but I think the signability is not going to be an option with him.
Yeah, I don't think these guys would do that. They would use that high a pick on Hankins unless they were pretty sure he wanted to turn pro. They did the same thing with a couple years ago with Justice Sheffield, one of the players they traded for to the Yankees for Andrew Miller. He was committed to Vanderbilt, and he was like a real high pick. One of their, I think he was 31, 32, 33 player taken, and he ended up taking the money and turning pro. So I think, these kids can always go back to school, and part of the contract, I think, they sign with their big league clubs is that the big league club will pay for their college when and if they retire, if they want to go back in the off season, although most of them don't have a chance because they're always playing baseball in the off season or training or playing in the Arizona Fall League or something. But I think if depending on your financial straits as a family, this is an awful lot of money to walk away from.
You're only 22, 23, 24 years old once, so that does definitely have a lot to do with it. All right, Paul, well, we're going to wrap it up here. After taking this weekend, you're heading up to Detroit and then on to Chicago. We will, let's see if the Indians can continue this little bit of momentum here and put a little space between themselves and the rest of the AL Central this week.
Yeah, I think you're right, Joe. I think, their pitching, their starting pitching is good. Their defense is good. Their offense is playing at a high level right now. If they can find 2 or 3 consistent relievers to get the ball to Allen in the ninth inning where he doesn't have to throw two innings every time out. I think this team could – this is a good stretch for him. But who knows? I mean, I felt the same way when they were going into Minneapolis and they lose 3 out of 4. So, you know, you can't take these teams, the Detroit and Chicago, lightly. They're rebuilding, but you know that's if you take your eye off the prize, that's when it comes back and hurts you.
All right, Paul, keep your eye on the prize this weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.